The scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Back to the Tennis Connected Studios for August 14th, 2016. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to review the Olympic Games from Rio as well as preview the Cincinnati Masters from Mason, Ohio. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Join them courtside at the US Open later this month for the best tennis experience possible. Before we begin this week's show, let's introduce our co-host, Parsa. How are you today, my friend?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Very good. Just got off the TV watching that fantastic Murray versus Del Potro gold medal encounter, which Andy Murray took to win his second career gold medal in singles, which is a fantastic achievement. I don't think any of his contemporaries have even come close to that, so we'll get into some of that. I mean, lots going on, Parsa. It's been, you know, super hectic, busy summer for all of us in the tennis world. You know, with the Olympics obviously crunched into this U.S. Open series with, you know, Toronto, Montreal, as well as Cincinnati, and then you have the Rio Olympics, got U.S. Open in a couple weeks, so it's all happening, Parsa, and that's why we're here to, you know, look at it and break it all down. So, Parsa, let's get right into, you know, the Rio Olympics and the gold medal matches. So, with the women's side, we had Monica Puig take out Angelique Kerber to win the gold medal for Puerto Rico. I think it's the first medal of any kind for her country, so which is awesome. I mean, let's just say that. And I was telling you off air that, you know, I've known of Puig and her game, but not really. She hasn't really done much. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, she's, you know, somebody who's in the majors and in these events, but not really going deep and upsetting a lot of, you know, the top players. But, you know, she comes in here like a house on fire and you know, mows through the field, and now she's, you know, Olympic gold medal winner. So, you know, talk about, you know, her game, how she achieved this feat, and what you see for her now going forward through for the rest of her career. Because the one parallel, Parsa, that I was thinking about when I was watching this story develop was Nicolas Massu from Chile, right? And we had him come in, I don't know when it was, I think, you know, about 15 years ago. He won the Olympic gold medal in singles and doubles. And that was the highlight of his career, which is, let's be honest, which is a fantastic highlight. But it never really materialized into, you know, much Grand Slam success or Masters 1000 or even top 10, you know, progression for him. But are we going to see the same type of thing for Monica, or is that, you know, is she going to be able to translate that into, you know, a bona fide tour success?
It's an interesting concept because you get a lot of these out of body experiences with when you're playing for your country.
Yes.
And, you know, I think it's something to do with the psychology behind it. I watched Puig play a night session match in Miami this year, and I couldn't for the life of me figure out why she wasn't a top five player in the world. She moves really well. She directs her shots really well. She hits with accuracy and depth. As that match went on that fateful night in Miami, you know, it got close, and she just sort of sprayed balls, and that was it. And she lost, you know, 4-4 or 4-5, something like that. And you could see that the separation was a mental separation and not a physical one. And so fast forward to the Olympics, where, you know, she's not playing with the fears of herself, but she's playing for her country and to make noise for her country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it helped to have the mass of her support behind her versus just being there playing for herself. And you know, sometimes, you know, with Massu, it didn't necessarily pan out, but sometimes these things do pan out. We've spoken over numerous podcasts before Djokovic became this dominant player. It was the Serbia winning the Davis Cup that,
yes,
was the impetus to everything.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing for Murray, you know, so can it be the same thing for Puig as well? I mean, it very well could be. It's going to take her to a confidence level where she's going to be like, I can do this. I've done it. And, you know, this is the mindset that I had. And she has to tap into it and rebound right away in Cincinnati and do it all over again. And that's the key. So can she do it? Yeah. I mean, she's always been, I thought she was always a very, very good player, very, very talented, and can hit her shots and hit her corners very, very well. You know, it was always questionable mentally for her, and she came over it when it counted in a big way. So congratulations to her.
No question. And then we had, obviously, Angie Kerber, who's had, you know, her own success this season, winning her maiden Grand Slam in Australia, following that up with a runner-up appearance at Wimbledon, and then now a silver medal in the Olympics. So, I mean, she's right there. And, you know, and we're going to talk about, you know, Serena Williams now has taken a wild card into Cincinnati. That's because she lost early, you know, in Rio, and now she's looking to make sure that she has that number one seed going into the U.S. Open, because I think if Angie Kerber can put together a strong performance in Cincy, she's got a heck of a good chance of being the number one ranked player based on the season that she's had. So for me, I think Kerber's another player, you know, who's so smart, and what she does really well, Parsa, in my opinion, is, you know, when players obviously they want to go down the line to finish points. That's how you're going to do it. And she does the no-brainer, which a lot of players don't do. And she just gets there and she tries to create the best angle possible cross-court and make the player run from, you know, that down-the-line position that they're in. All of a sudden, if they haven't hit a winner, now they got to really move and cover that cross-court shot, right? So we've seen her, you know, develop those angles, have that really good court sense, especially throughout the course of this season and, you know, even the second half now. She's really picked it up even more so. So I think that she's going to be somebody to watch in New York and as well as in Cincinnati. So Parson, now talking, you know, before we get into the Cincy draws and, you know, how Serena Williams has taken a wild card there, let's shift gears to the Rio Olympic men's draw, which was dominated, not necessarily dominated, but was captured obviously by Andy Murray, as I mentioned, took out Delpo in four tough sets today, over 4 hours for that finals. Delpo coming in off of, I mean, Parson, we haven't spoken for a while, but what a match that was in the first round against Djokovic. I mean, 7-6, 7-6, laser-like forehands all over the place, you know, just knocking the world number one off the court in a couple breakers. No breakpoint chances for Djokovic in that match at all. And when was the last time you saw Djokovic not even have a breakpoint chance in a match? And then you had him defeat Nadal yesterday in an over 3 hour affair, and then comes back the next day, plays over 4 hours with Murray. So even though he lost and he only got the silver, which I still think he's going to be super happy about because he got the bronze in London in the previous Olympics, you got to look at Delpo right now as a guy who played 7 hours of tennis in 2 days against Nadal and Murray, two all-time greats. You know, this has to bode well for him. And before, you know, you get into his analysis, you know, talk a little bit about Murray because he actually won this whole thing. And what a season, Parsa, Andy Murray has had. I mean, Parsa, let's just go back here, right? Finals of Madrid, won Rome. Finals of the French Open, won Queens. Won Wimbledon, did not play Canada, won Olympic gold medal. He's won 18 matches in a row. He's on fire. I mean, you know, who's not to say that this guy's not going to finish number one by the end of 2016?
That's his goal. That's exactly what he wants to do, is finish number one. It's the one thing he hasn't done now. So it's two Olympic golds, more than one Grand Slam title. And the only thing that's left on his resume is the number one title. And he's on Djokovic's heels. And Djokovic knows he's there and knows he's going to have to be playing some big tennis because with Del Potro lurking around, that guy is the counter to what Djokovic does, and he's his kryptonite, and lucky for Djokovic, Del Potro hasn't been around that much to really harm him, but Del Potro has definitely been even with Djokovic in his career, and it's definitely a stylistic thing, and how early he takes the ball, and he can actually penetrate his defense, and so it's very, very challenging for Djokovic every time they meet up, and what a match that was. That first round match was incredible. And
incredible.
You know, and in terms of Murray, I mean, he just continues to improve, continues to impress, and he's right in the prime of his career and showing it. And, you know, he's pushing all the right buttons, as they say, right now, and it's very, very obvious. And coming to the net in Rio, which was pretty impressive for me, something that it hasn't been a part of his game, but the court surface was a little bit slower, a little bit higher bouncing, and he was able to get in and force the issue like that. And so I thought that was an interesting layer he showed in his game, as well as his variety, as well as his movement, as well as his accuracy, and still being able to hide the second serve, but now maybe just willing to pull the trigger a little bit on that second serve and at least pose a threat instead of just constantly throwing in 80-mile-an-hour second serves. He sometimes will bump that thing up into the 100s, and just to show that he's capable of it, and that's enough sometimes to keep the returners at their heels. And so, Murray's making a charge for it. He's going for number one.
Yeah, and I think he definitely has a chance. I mean, you know, as we know by now, Djokovic is not playing in Cincy, even though he lost early in Rio. And Parsa, to you, was that, I think that was always kind of in his game plan, right? He said, I'm going to play in Canada. I get tons of support there, which I saw firsthand. Wins that event. I'm sure he didn't think that he was going to lose first round in Rio without any question, but he came up against the toughest unseeded player without question once again. And I mean, he went out, and I think he just wanted to stick with his game plan. I don't think he had any intention of ever playing all three events leading into the U.S. Open. So he's out. And is that more, in your opinion, even though I'm saying that, do you think that is injury? Like, do we really think that his left wrist is that much of an issue? Or is it more based on, you know, his schedule was always to play two events coming into the Open?
I think both.
Yeah.
I think for him to have some wear and tear is completely natural and expected. Otherwise, he'd be superhuman. Imagine that he wins all these matches and the physicality that he plays with not the biggest frame. He's a very slight person. To never have any injuries or inflammation would be superhuman. And so, I think both things are a factor. I think the feeling of some pain is definitely there. And then at the same time, the preservation of his body in the number of tournaments he's going to enter per year is also a part of the equation. So I think both is the answer.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you on that one. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how, you know, the Cincy draw pit plays out. We'll get to the men's side in a moment. But let's jump in right now into the Cincinnati women's draw, led by wildcard Serena Williams. And then basically everybody else is there from, again, Parsa, we talked about this again before we got on air, right? Like, we don't know what kind of withdrawals are going to happen, you know, prior to actually first round, second round matches taking place. I know on the women's side, I see here that Kvitova has claimed a right leg injury and she's out of the tournament. But pretty much we have Serena, Kerber, Halep, Muguruza, Radwanska, Vinci, Kuznetsova, Sivakova, and everybody's there. So, you know, Parsa, looking at the draws here, we have, as I mentioned, Serena up at the top. She could potentially play, you know, a player that she's had tons of trouble with in Christina McHale in her second round match, first match of the event. You know, McHale knows exactly how to play her. She's had some success. I believe she actually defeated her here a few years back too. So, you know, watch out for that one. Bichinski is in this little quarter here. We have Kuznetsova as well. And then you have Muguruza, Sivakova, and Bencic, who's been pretty quiet this summer with, I believe, some injuries rounding out this half. So when you look at, you know, this little quarter here, you know, let's talk about Serena for a second, Parsa, because she sustained a loss that we're not really used to her seeing, you know, happen in a big event. And, you know, at 35 now, the likelihood of her coming back and playing another Olympic games in Tokyo in 2020 at the age of 39, I don't think is going to happen. You know, I mean, you never want to say never, but the likelihood is low. Even though it's Serena and she's the greatest women's player of all time and an incredible athlete, I think that's a little bit of a stretch even for her. So, you know, so it looks like her Olympic days are done, but and now she's got enough medals, so I don't think she's going to be crying too much about that. But she's coming into this tournament. What's her mindset? And when you look at this half year, do you see her progressing through, even with the psychological, you know, little bit of, you know, a downfall with her losing early in Rio?
She was just banged up a little bit, Nima, to be honest with you. I think the aging has caught up with her a little bit, and not that it's going to be an end of the career type of thing, but mm-hmm. You know, the body doesn't heal the same way. It's the middle or the three quarters part of the season, and there's been a lot of physical matches, and for her, a lot of starting and stopping, which I don't know how good that is for the body. You know, I don't know how out of condition she gets and then back into condition she gets. So, you know, these are all things to look at, and you know, for her to take that wild card to Cincy, I'm a little bit questioning it in that. Are you really banged up? Because she didn't look very comfortable, very healthy in Rio. So, you know, what's she doing really in Cincinnati? And I get it, protecting that number one ranking. But, you know, she can do a lot more harm to herself psychologically than good. And this is a tournament that she's going to have to win. And for that reason alone, I can tell you looking at the draw, I mean, for that reason alone, if Serena has to win, I think she's going to win, Nima. What about you?
I don't know. I mean, because regardless of what you want to happen, you got to also look at the draw. You got to also look at the form. And coming off of an upset loss early in Rio, for me, is tough. But her draw is very workable. I think if she can get by, actually, Christina McHale, who's given her some problems in the past, I think she can do some damage here and go deep. And I think, as you said, for that reason, I have her definitely going into the semis. And again, this is going to be a tough tournament because we have, you know, you're coming off of the backside of Rio, and, you know, everybody's mindset is shifting now to the regular tour. And, you know, obviously the women have that luxury of playing best of three sets throughout, even though it was the same thing for the men in Rio, apart from the finals. So it's not going to be too much of a difference there. So I think you're going to see, for me, it's going to be Serena versus Sibyl Kova in the semifinals. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah, and I'm going to have Muguruza making it there.
Okay. And then now shifting now to the bottom half, we have Kerber, who's coming off, obviously. I mean, she's going to probably be playing on Wednesday. She's going to get a first round bye. She's potentially will be playing Medonovic in her first match. Stozer is lurking there too. Vinci, U.S. Open runner-up from last year. Suarez Navarro. Halep, who's had a decent summer. Slitovino, who, as we mentioned, defeated Serena, and Radwanska, and Konta, who's playing some good tennis right now. So that's somebody else I think to watch out for. Comes in as the 10th seed, so great for her. But with all of that, I mean, I like what I've been seeing from Kerber. I mean, I think she's kind of figured it out. She had that little bit of a slump after the Australian Open, even though she won Stuttgart, lost really early in the French, but then now she's back. You know, now she showed that form that took her to becoming a Grand Slam champion. So I'm going to pencil her in for the semifinals, even though she's coming off of, you know, playing, you know, today in Rio de Janeiro. Sorry, playing yesterday, I believe, or whatever it was. And then we have also my second semifinalist is going to be difficult because, again, I don't know how everybody's going to be beat up. But maybe Radwanska. I'm going to go with Radwanska to make the semis as well.
I'm going to have Halep and Kerber in my bottom half.
Okay. And then from the top going now down to the bottom, I'm going to go with Serena to make the finals versus Radwanska. Actually, I think she'll upset Kerber in the semis. And then I have Serena winning the event in three sets over Radwanska. What do you have?
I definitely have Serena winning, and I have Halep overcoming Kerber there, and I think it's going to be a nice clean match, Serena versus Halep, but I think it's going to be something pretty good, like a 6-3 in the third for Serena.
And now moving, shifting gears now, Parsa, to the men's draw. I mean, this to me is going to be, you know, asterisk on top of asterisk on top of asterisk, because Andy Murray is the number one seed, right? And he just won the Rio Olympics in Brazil. You're telling me in 2 days' time, I don't think he's flying out tonight. Maybe he is. I mean, these guys really have their act together. They know what they're doing. So if he gets out today, let's say best case scenario, if he leaves today, he's going to be there, what, sometime in the afternoon tomorrow, you know, in Cincinnati. If he leaves tomorrow morning, he'll get there probably at night. And then he's going to have to get ready and play his, I would say, maybe night session on Wednesday. So as a top seed with Djokovic, you know, taking a pass on this week. And his first match is going to be either Karlovic or Juan Monaco. Now, let's spend a second here on Karlovic, Parsa. I don't know how much you've been following him this summer, but he won Newport, made the finals of Washington, won a couple matches in Canada, coming off of, you know, that finals in Washington. And then last night in Los Cabos, you know, an inaugural event there in Mexico, he defeated top seed Feliciano Lopez 6-2. So this guy's won 8 career titles now, 2 this year, and he's coming off of, in his last 4 events, he's won 2 of the 4 and made the finals of the other one, which was 500. And this is all at the tender age of 37. Playing the best tennis of his life, okay? On fire right now. Serve is there. He's coming into the net. His sliced backhand is knifing low. Playing very good tennis. And I was thinking about this. You know, what has happened here? And, you know, I sat beside his coach when he was playing early in Toronto. I believe he was playing on the grandstand, one of his matches. And what a positive guy he is. I don't have his name at the moment, but, I mean, they're right there with each other. You know what I mean? And he's clapping for everything. He's getting up, pumping his fist. I'm talking about, Parsa, this is 30-15 in the first game of the match, and his coach is getting up fist pumping. You know what I mean? Like, they're completely dialed in. They know what they have on their hands here. They know the form, and they know that weapon that he has with that right shoulder and that height with that serve. And I think that they're in a good place, and you're telling me that you cannot see an upset there, Karlovich, because I think he's going to take out Juan Monaco. Murray Karlovich first round. I mean, that's just a nightmare coming in, you know, to a new country, new city in your first match. So that's what I see there. And that's even if he plays. I mean, he could pull out tomorrow. You know, he could just say, listen, I woke up, I'm stiff as a board, I'm not going to be able to do this. Nishikori, same thing. I mean, he just played Nadal today in a super tough match to win the bronze medal. So kudos to Kai for winning that. He's probably going to have Taylor Fritz in his first match. Other guys in this quarter, we have Goffin, Gasquet, who hasn't been playing much this summer, Kevin Anderson, who's always tough. So when you're looking at this, and we got to work with what we have right now, in this quarter, who do you have moving on to the semifinals?
I mean, it's impossible to tell because there's going to be withdrawals everywhere and injuries and God knows what. But
yes.
I mean, if Murray plays, I'd pick Murray, but I don't know. I have a hard time kind of wrapping my head around why he'd play. I know he's trying to go for number one, and that's my logic. And you know, maybe he can play. Maybe he's healthy. If Murray plays, I would have Murray. If not, my second guy would be Goffin. I think he's the one that's going to go through. I think there's no chance Nishikori plays. So I think he's out. And I think Goffin is the next class player in that section after Murray and Nishikori. So that's who I'm going with, logic.
That's actually a great pick. That's actually, for me, it's a great pick. And I really wouldn't be surprised if it's Karlovich and Goffin in the quarters right there at the top. Because I think even if Murray plays, I mean, he's going to, I'm telling you, it's going to be a couple breakers there anyway. It's going to be a tough match. And then he's going to have to play potentially Anderson, another big server. So in some respects, you know, it could be an easier, you know, go for him. But I don't know how hot it's going to be in Mason next week. I think it's always pretty toasty there anyways. But, you know, it's a couple big servers. The points will not be too long, but the chances of an upset are more prevalent, right? Another thing you got to look for, Parsa, is I think, and I'm not 100% sure, but I believe the points from Canada from last year come off this week. Because obviously this time last year, we had Toronto this week, and then next the week coming up would have been Cincy, right? So Djokovic gained all of those points by winning Toronto, but he's going to lose his finals points. Murray's going to lose his points from winning last year in Canada. And then because Djokovic is not defending his final points, he's going to lose those. So Murray definitely has an opportunity to gain those, right? So that's another reason why he would want to, you know, go as deep as possible here. But again, that's pending on, you know, that's going to happen. Now, moving on to the fourth seed here, which is Milos Raonic. I mean, he's been chilling. He's been off for a couple weeks now after his quarterfinal loss to Monfils in Toronto. You know he's going to be fresh and fresh as a daisy coming in, licking his chops. He's got, you know, again, this is a tougher draw than it was in Toronto, in my opinion, as it stands now. Fognini or Isner in his first match. That's by no means easy. Both those guys are playing pretty well. Then you got Zverev lurking there. Batista Agut, who's always a tough out. But I think Milos has pretty much a picture-perfect record against him. Dominic Thiem, who's been off for a couple weeks. Look for him. I think he's going to want to do some damage here. He's going to be fresh. Monfils, who I think is going to be a little bit beat up, if I was Gaël, I would probably skip this event, to be quite honest with you, because I think he's got a definite chance with his new maturity in his game to have a deep run at the U.S. Open, even make the Final Four, in my opinion. But he's going to have to stay fresh because injuries and all that stuff have been his biggest issue throughout the year. So I'm going definitely with Milos to make the semifinals here. And that's what I got.
Very good. I mean, I think a lot of people are going to be withdrawing. Makes sense for a lot of people to let go here and see what happens. But, I think it's going to be somewhat surprising. I think Milos loses that first round match. And I think there's going to be some question marks with him going into the U.S. Open. And I think someone like Fognini could be the guy who does it if he shows up and he can play, or even if Isner's there, I think he can give him a lot of trouble. He'll get a lot of support in Cincinnati, and I don't think that's an easy one. So, for me, I'm going to go with a surprising pick, and I'm going to say that the guy who's going to come through here is going to be Alexander Zverev. I think it's going to be a matter of time, whether it's this week, next week, or next year, whatever it is, this guy's going to have a breakthrough. And I think it's going to come pretty soon. So why not gear up for the U.S. Open and make a run there? And so it starts in Cincinnati for him, and I'm going to go with the shocker, Zverev, in the semis.
I love that pick. So I'm going to go with Milos. You're going to go with Zverev. And Parsa, I didn't really give you a semifinal pick at the top. I gave you a couple quarterfinal guys. I think I'm going to also go with Goffin to make the semifinals here. If you remember, he made, I believe, the semis in both Miami as well as Indian Wells. So, this guy's had a good year, and he plays really well on hard courts. Moving now to the bottom half, we have Thomas Burdick, who's been practicing in Miami, didn't take part in the Olympics. So he's going to be fresh coming in, and he's pretty much, you can pencil him in for quarters every single week. So would be foolish not to do that once again here, especially considering that he's got a qualifier or Granoles first up, Verdasco, Albert Vinoles. I think, or Kyrgios or Cilic, all those guys played in the Olympics. So for me, it's going to be Burdick into the quarters. And then you have some interesting things that could happen. So Parsa, we had the last time we saw Nick Kyrgios, or we talked about him, he tanked in his first round against Shapovalov in Toronto, lost that match, worst loss of his career. He also admitted that. Then he comes back the next week, Parsa, wins a 250, his second title of the season in Atlanta, which was a great effort for him. Super tough conditions. So for me, even though it wasn't the toughest draw, let's admit that, for me, the conditions were brutal. You're talking about over 120, Fahrenheit on court. It was crazy, but he came through that, played some back-to-back matches. I think if he gets by Lucas Pouille, I think he's going to the quarters because, then we have Rafael Nadal as the third seed here. I don't think he plays either. I heard that some of his team, through Twitter, are already in Cincinnati. So it looks like he's going to show up. I don't know. With all of this tennis, with that bum wrist that he still has, he said it's not 100%. And he just played today. And he played, a three-hour match with Del Potro yesterday. He's going to have to play again on Wednesday. And you can't fit all of these guys into the night match, right? You can't put Murray, you can't put Nadal, you can't put everybody in night session. So you're going to have to put one of them in the day. So it's going to be hot in that scenario. So I think it's going to be Kyrgios and Burdick in the quarters for me here. What do you have? And then I'm going to have Kyrgios making the semifinals.
This is like, it's just impossible to pick, but, there's a lot of potentials here, Nila. You've got Query, who's been playing some ball, and yes, has been crushing the ball, and so you think maybe he can make a run. You think Burdick is the perennial guy. He's always in the semis for no reason. You got to think Nadal's not going to be there, and so I'm definitely going to have Burdick going through. I think he's the guy that's going to make it through. I think it's going to be Burdick Kyrgios quarter. It'll be interesting. I just don't think Nick is going to have the game yet to really upend Burdick. I think you need a little bit more consistency in order to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Going down into that final section, what really interests me there is how does Steve Johnson react? Quite an effort, I think. In Rio, I think he made a little bit of noise, made a little bit of a name. The ball was higher bouncing, and I think he did okay. But he sort of somehow the perennial NCAA winner finds ways to lose on the pro level.
Mm-hmm.
I just find that very interesting. In that bottom section, who do you have in the bottom, Nima?
Bottom for me, I mean, again, there's some interesting stuff here, and I'm happy that it's with American tennis. Now we have Riley Opelka, who, he made since semifinals of Atlanta. So he's been playing well, and the guy's 6'11",
just crushing
serves, good athlete, better backhand than Isner, huge forehand too. He's hitting it easy over 100 miles an hour. And, he's just jumping out of his shoes. He's young. He's not going to break down as much at this point. He's got Chardy in his first match. That's never going to be easy. But, watch out for that guy. Who's to say he can't, make the quarters here? I don't know if he has the experience yet. He definitely doesn't. But then you got a guy like Steve Johnson. Again, it's about the rebound. Like how, he just played Murray, gold medalist, a tough match. He almost beat him. That was a tough one. Three-setter against Murray in Rio. And then you won, I believe, the silver with, or was it bronze? Sorry, you won the bronze with Jack Sock, right?
Somehow.
So they won that. So he's coming off of a high. He won that tournament in Nottingham on grass a month or so ago. So his second half of this year has definitely turned around. That's without question. It's, a lot of stuff is happening here too, but do we really overlook, Wawrinka? Listen, he came in, didn't play Rio, said he had an injury, but now he's here. So it's for me. Stan is the class player in this little section, in this quarter. He should move on to the quarterfinals. I think he does. Who does he face? That's obviously the, something to look at. And I would like to go with Opelka, just because it would be cool to see it. But I think you got to go with Tsonga. I'm going to go with Tsonga and Wawrinka to meet off, face off in the quarters there. And I'm going with Stan to make the semifinals against Kyrgios, which would be, obviously, considering their history, a fun one to watch.
Yeah, I think that's a very good pick. At the same time, though, historically, Cincinnati's faster, lower bouncing.
Yes.
I don't know how good that is for Stan.
Okay.
So it makes me question him. I look at a guy like Grigor Dimitrov, sometimes shows a sign of life and sometimes he doesn't. So I'm not really sure there. And, perennially Tsonga is sort of like my Berdych in the section before. And so for that reason, I think we're going to get a Berdych Tsonga quarterfinal. And I'm going to have Berdych going through to the final. I don't know why. So
Tsonga's on the in the bottom half. So
yep.
So Berdych, or are you saying semifinals?
Yeah, so I think it's going to be Tsonga Wawrinka quarter and then Tsonga in the semi. And I think he's going to play Berdych.
Okay.
Yeah. And for me, I'm going to have Berdych advancing there. And in my top half there, I've got Zverev facing either Goffin or Murray. I don't know why, Nima, during this entire podcast, I keep going back and forth with whether Murray will play or not. He may play. He's going to look at his first two matches and he's going to say, these are serve and return skill type guys. They're not going to physically take a ton out of me.
Exactly, yeah.
And if he plays, he's going to win this thing. And I think he's going to see it exactly as I see it. So for that reason, I'm going to go with Murray and Zverev. And I think that's going to be a blockbuster again. I think Zverev could even upend him because he's been there against the big guys, equally matching these guys, beating Federer, should have beaten Nadal. I think his belief system is building, and I think we're going to get something tenderizing and amazing, something like 7-5 in the third in that semi. I think Murray will eventually advance, and I think he's going to pick apart Berdych, something like 3-2 in the final, and I think Murray's going to hold the title.
See, the thing is for me, Parsa, I agree with you. I think if Murray plays and if he goes all out, like empties the tank, I think somehow he still wins this title because he's the best player in the field. And he's won 18 matches in a row. He's feeling super confident and he's invincible at the moment. But how does that then translate into his U.S. Open chances? Because, yes, he will come in undefeated, you know, since the French Open, lost to Djokovic, right? But how tired is he going to be to then try to win the final Grand Slam of the season? He's going to have a week off. Let's say he plays, you know, the first Tuesday night. So whatever, he gets, you know, 10 days off or so before the U.S. Open. But I think you're right. I think he plays. But I have no idea. I mean, it's tough. I still think I'm going to go with, you know, this is what I'm going with, Parks. I'm going with Goffin, Raonic, semifinals. I'm having Raonic come through there. And then on the bottom, I'm going to have Wawrinka come through against Raonic, and I'm having Stan win tournament. Three sets.
Very good.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm banking on with Murray that there was an interview I read with him post-Wimbledon, and he said, you know, the change now with Yvonne is that we're going to be going at it every week. We're going to play it every week. Like, we're going to try to win it. And, you know, that's the difference is I've historically always played for certain events. If I'm playing Cincinnati, I'm looking forward to the U.S. Open and sort of not giving everything I have for Cincinnati. It's like, that's going to change. And I'm going to bring it, and I'm going to get to number one in the world. And so I believe him.
Well, that's what you need to do. If
that's
you
what
want
you
it.
Need to do.
Yeah.
I mean, that this is exactly what he needs to go back-to-back, prove he's the best player in the draw every single week.
Yes.
And that's how you become number one. I mean, that is the definition of number one. So, we'll see how it goes. I mean, who knows? Lots to talk about next week, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I'll say one last thing. Regardless of the high emotionally and all of that, Murray still looked good at the end of that match with Delpo. I mean, yeah, obviously, he's a human being. He's going to be tired, right? But, I mean, I don't think you can question Murray's fitness right now. He's right there. I mean...
No, and he's played a lot of big matches. You know, he acts the part very well as well.
Yes. Yeah, he doesn't seem rattled even when Delpo's unleashing forehands left, right, and center. And, you know, all these guys are going right through for his throat. He looks like he's like, okay, bring it, man. I'm ready to go. Because his legs are there and he's strong. His core is there, you know, and his strokes are holding up. And, you know, with Lendl in his corner now, he knows that he can't screw around as much. And, you know, he's going to go through, and definitely really tough guy for me, you know, for anyone to beat at the U.S. Open. So, you know, interesting week of tennis ahead. It's going to be, you know, some more developing storylines both on the men's and women's. Parsa and I will obviously be watching and then reporting next Sunday to wrap up the Cincinnati Masters. In the meantime, you can catch Parsa at Parsa Sammy on Twitter, myself at Tennis Connected. You can also download our podcast on iTunes. And lastly, make sure for anybody who's still looking to get down to the U.S. Open to hit up Grand Slam Tennis Tours for all your ticket and traveling needs. They also have a really cool package with the Bryan Brothers that you can take part with them. It's a really cool interactive clinic, and you do some video analysis, you know, chat with, you know, the best doubles team of all time and all that stuff. So make sure to hit up GrandSlamTennisTours.com and see what they have to offer. Lastly, Parsa, thank you so much for joining us this week. Thanks everybody out there for listening, and we will chat with you guys in 7 days' time.